Hello, friends. Welcome to the inaugural episode of This Must Be Shared. My name is Tara. I also perform under the name Hippie Hani. I've finally decided to start my own podcast. I've had several people suggest this to me over the years, but I think it is the time of podcasts. Podcasts are having their moment in the sun, and I'm saying yes, I will be part of history now. And if this only meets the ears of my friends and family and loved ones, so be it. If this carries on and out to others, then that's wonderful too. Welcome. I know many people who have such wonderful adventures to share. I'm hoping to get some of them to come be interviewed and share their stories on this podcast. But today I am wanting to share a story that my sister wrote. She has written longer books, and but this time I wanted to share something she wrote that's inspired by the current lockdown and everything that's going on in the world. And it's a shorter story, but it is absolutely worth a listen. It must be shared. And here it is, Generation C by Elise Axel. Pull up your mask, Mara. While the order was common enough, there was a frantic edge to my mother's voice. My brother had been notorious at letting his mask slip when we went out in public. His offense cost us all. After repeated violations, the government had taken him away to a re-education camp. My parents got fined for the improper education of their children. My mother lost the right to homeschool my 8-year-old sister and me. Now, at the age of 16, I must face public school for the first time, all because my hyperactive 12-year-old brother took off his mask at a restaurant before the protective door shut behind our waiter. I dutifully secured the mask on my face before opening the car door. Taking a shaky breath, I stepped onto the sidewalk. The school towers over me, and panic courses through my veins. The gray bricks seem so menacing. Even the pavement under my feet feels oppressive. My eyes skirt every which way, no doubt resembling a bunny being cornered by a predator. A sea of colorful masks surround me, flocking towards the door. While there are many students, they all seem keep a safe distance from each other. I find no comfort in this. I long to be home. I yearn to see my family's faces, mask-free. To me, homeschool had been freedom. Freedom to go about my day. Ooh. Edit point. Freedom to go about my day without the hindrance of a mask. Now, a humid air swirls around my nose and mouth as trapped breath pours out of my nostrils. I hate it. My breath quickens, making the mask that much more unbearable. Honey, you'll be fine, my mother calls out the window. I turn around to look at her face. She leans toward the open window and makes eye contact with me. Her sunflower mask covers her lips. However, I sense that she's attempting to give me her most reassuring smile. It falls flat. Listen, just follow the rules and you'll be fine. Her voice is firm but gentle. Now go inside. Nodding, I take a shaky breath before turning. I can do this. Just step inside and follow the rules, I resolve. 2 steps in, I nearly collide with a tall, dark-clad boy. Watch it, he snaps, anger filling his eyes. He storms off before I can utter an apology. As if it would have mattered, his black attire and skull mask were so sinister that I could do little more than open my mouth. Tears form in my eyes, but I refuse to let them spill. I take a deep breath and march forward, this time paying closer attention to my surroundings. A line of students form at the door, waiting their turn to go through the metal arches. I join them, the line, and tune in to the other students exchanging pleasantries. My eyes search theirs as I remain waiting. None of them seem scared or perturbed. Some of their eyes appear happy, others bored. This is their normal. Soon it will be mine. I listen to the chatter of my peers, hoping that soon I will have a friend among them to pass the time before entering the scanner. I love your masking gloves, a petite blonde comments on her friend's apparel. While I've lived a relatively sheltered life, even I can tell that the lanky brunette the blonde speaks to is wealthy. A quick glance at the tag on her jeans confirms they were designers. Thanks, Tiffany. The brunette traces her fingers up her silky black gloves to the red trim. She points to her mask, which has a matching design, and a smile tugs at the corner of her eyes. It's the latest from Prada. They release their new line, Tiffany shakes, placing her equally pristine purple-gloved hands up to her matching mask. Careful, the brunette warns her friends. You don't want to get in trouble for touching your face again, do you? Tiffany jerks her head, hand down to her side. Oops. And no, the brunette continues. They haven't officially released the new line. My dad knows some people who work there. He got them for me 3 weeks early. Nothing but the best for daddy's little girl, he said. Do you think he could score any for me? Tiffany asks. An alarm sounds before I can hear the other girl's reply. Warning, warning. A computer-animated voice barks through the intercom. Fever detected. Students peel away from the fever detector. I don't move, unsure of what to do. The boy who'd set off the alarm turns toward me, eyes wide. His eyes search around him for the person who had triggered the alarm. When he sees no other students nearby, he breathes heavily. He looks at me again, and I know he is planning to run. His reaction time is too slow. A plastic barrier springs from the floor, entrapping him within its sterile walls. Clear the way, shouts a voice behind me. I jump to the side just in time to see a team in hazmat suits surge past. The boy beats against the wall. This has to be a mistake, he screams. My dad checked me this morning. I'm fine. His yells are to no avail. The hazmat team enters the barrier. They spray him down and put him in a containment suit that looks like a giant plastic bubble before removing him from our sight out of the side door. I can't see much from where I'm standing, but I catch a glimpse of a plastic tunnel and know they'll take him to the school's medical lab for assessment. My mom had told me once those didn't exist in her time when she went to school. Only a nurse's station. Long gone were those days. After they removed the boy, they disinfect the area he stood, and the students form a line once more. The casual chatter resumes. No one seems fazed about their peer getting swept away, other than me. Gradually, the line moves forward. The closer I get, the more my heart pounds. My mother checked my temperature a half an hour ago. But hadn't the boy said that same thing about his dad? I step through the metal arches, willing myself to breathe. Even still, I hold my breath and wait for the deafening siren. None comes. I let out a breath and continue forward into the sterilization chamber. White walls greet me as I enter the spotless chamber. I've been in many decontamination rooms. Every time there is a public event or I go to the store, I must enter a room like this. Still, the thought of walking into it 5 days a week daunts me. I glance up at the ceiling in time to see the sanitation mist fall down on me. The mist settles. Then a green light clicks in, and the door in front of me opens, releasing me into a school hallway. Now free to roam the halls of my new school, my anxiety dissipates and my breath regulates. Unsure of where to go next, I walk over to the smart map, asking it where my first class is. A green light emanates from the mirror, scanning my retinas. When the green light disappears, a map forms in its place, with a list of my subjects and my classrooms. I transfer the data to my phone. The vocal command activates instantly, and a computer voice sounds guiding me to my class. As I walk behind the halls, I listen to the other students, watching them with great interest. Most of my interactions with people my age have been virtual. In the virtual world, I could see their lips. Here, things were different. Their personalities reflected in their masks and their gloves. Some had funny sayings plastered on their masks, while others wore vibrant patterns, favorite movie characters, or neutral patterns that would go with just about anything. The more affluent students wore designer ones. It seemed like everyone wore a store-bought mask. My eyes looked down at my plain, homemade blue gloves. For a second, I was grateful for the concealment my matching blue mask provided. I feel insignificant and boring next to the rich teens, especially the ones with their vivid eyeshadow that make their eyes pop. I don't even wear mascara. The school bell rings, breaking me from my reverie. I make my way to room 105. When I enter the room, I'm directed to a desk that's encased by glass walls and a ceiling near the back corner. I open the glass door and it shuts behind me. I exhale in relief as I take off the uncomfortable mask and gloves. Curious to know what my classmates look like under their masks, I scan the room. Tiffany and Prada Girl are nearby. The moment her mask is off, Tiffany pulls out some lipstick and presses it against her lips. Prada Girl doesn't require any. Her lips are stained with long-lasting, smudge-resistant lipstick, and they look flawless. She's stunning. Before I can observe any other students, the glass panel in front of me comes to life, displaying our teacher's face and the board. Several hours pass in these pods. All instructions are shown on the glass panel and spoken over the intercom. During group projects, the teacher links my screen and intercom with two other students until its completion. No one leaves the cubicles unless given a hall pass to go to the bathroom. Unless there's a more urgent need to go there, students must wait until there is a green light on their pod to go. Computers sync the pods to allow access at different intervals, which allows limited contact between students. Every time my cubicle dings, I go to the bathroom, whether or not I need to. The four glass walls suffocate me more than my mask. If it means a chance to stretch and not feel confined, then the coarse blue fabric is more welcome against my skin. More than welcome. At each bathroom break, I see the same two girls. We nod at each other. One girl makes small talk with me, welcoming me to the school. Beneath her colorful polka dot mask, I know there's a warm smile. Her name is Katie, and we connect instantly. Turns out that Katie and I have the same lunch period. We make our way to the lunch area and find a place to sit together. The lunch tables are cubed off, much like the classroom cubicles, only these are in clusters that face each other. They're still sectioned off with glass barriers, but this time we can see each other without virtual filters. I learn quickly that her favorite topic is, what was life like when our parents went to school? Did you know they used to eat lunch at circular tables without pods and without masks or gloves, she asks? The questions continue much like this every time I see her. During our next bathroom break, she continues on with her back when commentary. I heard that they also used to wash their hands for less than 20 seconds. Can you imagine the germs they spread? We washed our hands as she shared this. How is that possible? I asked as I watched the clock on the mirror tick by and listened to the computerized voice that tells me just how many seconds I've been washing my hands. 17, 18, 19. Well, they didn't always have an interface counting down for them, Katie explains, gesturing with her hands as she does. They had to count in their own heads. And we all know that people speed things up when they do that. Besides, before the first virus, I don't think many people even knew the 22nd rule. No computer monitoring systems connected to smart mirrors and sinks. That's incomprehensible. I shudder at the thought. How did my parents survive for so many years without such devices? I glance over at her mirror and notice the big red number 19 flashing. She failed to complete her cycle. No doubt she thought she had reached the number 20. Moments later, strike one replaces the 19. I frown. Her breach of conduct makes me nervous. My brother still isn't back. I'm about to say something when the bell chimes. It's time for our next class. We head into the PE room. The pods are bigger here. There's a big empty floor in the center of the room. Today we will play volleyball. Virtual replicas of me, my classroom, my classmates, and a volleyball net appear in the rectangular space between us. My glass screen flashes to life and I can see through my aviator glasses. The ball is coming toward me and I react as if it weren't a simple projection, jumping and striking. My technique is poor and the teacher's voice comes to my intercom giving me instructions on how to improve. The game continues. After each round, the computer gives us a replay from the center square. Once more, our teacher explains how we can improve our techniques. I survived the first day with no violations. Only one unintentional bump took place at the beginning of the day with the dark-clad boy. Aside from him, I kept a distance from the other students. I breathe a sigh of relief. Perhaps I can do this public school thing without causing an infraction after all. Weeks pass in a similar rhythm of classes and socializing with Kate on bathroom and lunch breaks. We always take our time on bathroom breaks, using the entire allotted time. The other girl, Sam, has little to no interest in joining us. She's in and out as fast as possible. Kate, on the other hand, is quite an animated talker. She can't contain herself, making big gestures as she talks. On four of these bathroom visits, I noticed her habit of talking with her hands, which has caused her to pull away from the water bottle. On four of these bathroom visits, I noticed her habit of talking with her hands has caused her to pull away from the water before the count has struck 20. Today, she's just as chipper as ever. She talks about the fun she had decorating her current mask with her older sister. She reaches up to point at the colorful butterfly she'd drawn. This time, it was 3 seconds too soon. Strike five, her mirror reads. Soon, a red light flashes and an ear-piercing alarm sounds. A containment box springs up from the floor, surrounding Kate. Her eyes widen and she presses her gloves against the plastic walls. Mara! Desperation fills her voice. What's going on? Mara, help! My eyes rove across the room, searching for a way to help my friend. Soon, two people in hazmat suits enter, demanding that I clear the area. Kate screams for my help. I have a choice. Try to fight the two people and free my friend, or walk away. To my horror, I realize that there is no choice. Not really. After John's folly, a single violation could rupture what is left of my family, forcing us all into re-education camps. I can do nothing. I'm one against two. I follow the only course left for me and turn my back on my friend. Her screams follow me out of the bathroom. My name echoes across the hall. I'm sure her voice will haunt my dreams forever. There's nothing you can do, I tell myself. My heart pounded as I thought of Kate and possibly her entire family being hauled to a re-education camp, knowing that they may or may not return. Still, it's better her family than mine, isn't it? Shame floods through me. I assuage my guilt by reciting the facts. No matter how difficult it is to give up my best friend, I have to remember that things are not the same as when my parents were young. When they were kids, they had yet to face COVID-19 or worse. To see the virus mutate into COVID-28 and COVID-35, They knew nothing of social distancing. My generation knows nothing else. We are Generation C. And that was Generation C by Elise Axel. And that, my friends, is what is known as a near future dystopian. Well, now, Margaret Atwood does not like it called science fiction. She calls it, I believe, near future. What does she call it, Tara? Now I'm going to have to look it up. But I would call this a near future dystopian science fiction. And I hope you all enjoyed my reading of it. And until you can hear my voice again, I hope you all have peace.